Welcome back to Hour 2 of Sound Space. We are in the spot with a phone-in interview with Canadian-born, New York City-based jazz pianist, vocalist, composer, and educator, Brenda Earl Stokes. She'll be speaking about her journey, what inspires her, what makes her feel motivated to be a teacher and an educator, and about her new solo album and her first solo of 6 albums, Solo Sessions Volume 1. Here's what the conversation happened about, came about, and said right here on Sound Space.
So 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the spot. We're in the top of hour 2 of Sound Space. I'm Zanuck Zigian. You're multi-talented, Brenda. I can so tell you've released 5 albums thus far. Is your new album, Solo Sessions Volume 1, is this considered your 6th album now?
It is.
I
guess it's my 6th.
Isn't that something? Well, 6 is a lucky number. It's quite different than your other albums, the Solo Sessions. It is an exploration of the solo space. I really like the way that sounds. You did it all in one take, this album, in about 4.5 hours or so. It happened at the Public Library in Sarnia, Ontario. I find that to be very touching and sweet, and also very intimate, because you are from Sarnia, Ontario. You've done a lot of your work in New York City, and you're New York City based. What can you tell us about the experience doing it that way?
It just sort of all came out of the blue. A friend of mine from high school reached out to me. I grew up in Sarnia, Ontario in Canada. He just reached out to me and said, you know, the piano at the Sarnia Public Library sounds great. And he had just done a recording session there, actually recording our old high school band director, Mr. Nichols, did sort of an improvisational classical thing there.
Nice.
And he said to me, I don't know if you're ever in Sarnia anymore, but if you're in the area and you want to record, come on down. And I said, well, as a matter of fact, my son and I were already scheduled. We had already booked flights to go to visit my father.
Oh.
And so I said, oh, sure. Why don't we throw together something? So he brought all of his professional equipment over and hired a recording assistant. And we figured, record a couple of songs and see what shows up. And at the end of 4 hours, we had recorded several takes of 11 songs. Mm-hmm. And we kind of looked at each other and went, oh my goodness, I think we just recorded an album.
Oh.
The whole thing happened by chance, and this particular space, the second floor of the Sarnia Public Library, has a very beautiful Steinway piano that was purchased in the very early 1970s. I think it was 1971. And this was home to all of the local music festivals. The Royal Conservatory piano exams were held there, and I have performed on that particular piano probably more than I've performed on any other concert piano in my life. And I have a picture of myself at age 5 playing on this exact same piano.
It gets more touching, the story. I love it. It's beautiful.
It was just an incredible, and the piano is in phenomenal shape, and it was a piano that was bought by the entire community. There was a big fundraising. I actually went back to the archives of the library to find out about the piano, and they had done citywide fundraising, and, you know, people could donate one key on the piano, and so that they would have a very special piano in town to make the, you know, music and performance a priority. It really was like being on a homecoming to play on the piano and record this music.
Brenda, when I hear that, there's a little bit of activism in that scenario, in the sense that it was a collaborative project that produced this wonderful thing for the community. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And
yeah,
you're an activist. And I love in your bio reading that you've done a lot of programs, you've created them, you've done foundation work. I'd love to hear your personal take on that. What is it like to be out there? I see you're with the Women in Jazz organization, and
yes. It
helps to represent and empower women in the wider jazz community. Brenda, why don't you say a little bit about that? Because I think it goes in lines with the passion of your work.
The Women in Jazz organization was founded almost 2 years ago by Roxy Koss, who's a really wonderful tenor saxophonist and composer based here in New York. And I've been involved and active in the organization since its founding. There are several initiatives that people are putting together in so many different ways to get more representation of women in festivals, to create sort of a community of women musicians, women and non-binary musicians, I should say, because we're completely inclusive, and to be able to make things easier and make things more accessible for younger women who are pursuing their lives in jazz. So a couple of the initiatives that I'm involved with is they have a mentorship program where, you know, older, more established musicians like myself, we are paired with college students or a younger female or non-binary musician so that we can mentor them and give support. And it's quite a structured program. And I'm very excited to be doing my second year with that this year. And I've also started an educational database of women jazz musicians, women and non-binary jazz musicians, so that when people are looking to hire guest artists or private teachers or adjudicators, there will be one master list of women and non-binary musicians, jazz musicians, people could choose from. That activism is important to me. When I was growing up as a young woman jazz musician, there were very few women around, and there were not a lot of role models around, and there was a lot of discrimination, and it was very hard to get access to performing and reviews and to be hired. So that's something that is very important to me. And then the other thing that's very important to me is education. And as you said, I had a 10-year residency at the Ronald McDonald House here in New York, and I have brought many, many music programs to inner city students with the New York Pops Orchestra and their education department and the Midori and Friends Foundation. I love bringing, you know, music to underserved communities, and I love making jazz something that people relate to women more.
Mm-hmm.
So there are two things that are big passions to me.
I can really hear it when you even just explain it. You're also a teacher. Some of this goes hand in hand with that. I went through your website and I saw your separate website for your teaching and your classes that you offer.
Yeah.
And you have a blog. I love your blog, Brenda.
Oh, thank you.
It is.
If people want to know what it's pianoandvoicewithbrenda.com.
Uh-huh.
And I sort of live like two separate lives, I think, at once. And one of them is my performance career. And then the other one is I've had a lot of years as an educator, and I am a specialist in voice pedagogy, which is the teaching of training the instrument, the voice. But I've also developed an online course called Piano Skills for Singers. And this is, again, a form of activism for me because, you know, so many singers are women, and a lot of times women singers are not as empowered in the industry, and there's always discrimination against singers. And so part of what I want my contribution to be is educating singers on how they can accompany themselves and how they can gain the piano skills that they need so that they can be successful as musicians, as band leaders, so that they can, you know, be more hireable. For me, I think of it as another act of activism for empowering women and singers.
Well, yeah, and I think that a large part of what I've read about how you approach these things is you really open up the door to share with your clients as well as your students this idea of there really needs to be a direct relationship between you, a person, and the instrument. itself.
Yes.
That sometimes gets overlooked or not really talked about all that much because I think people take it for granted. Oh, you know, you play you play sax, you play piano, you play, you know, the guitar. Well, you must love it. You must have some relationship with it. Oh, some people do and some people don't. And some have better relationships than others with their instruments. And I thought that was a really interesting angle in the way that you approach your teaching. I think it really comes through in your work. The album Before Solo Sessions, Volume 1, is really, really neat. It's called Right About Now. You do a mix of covers and sometimes your own compositions as well. Your albums reflect a lot of covers because you were like the go-to piano person on a cruise ship. You were a jukebox almost.
Yes.
Brenda, yes, I loved that description of you, given how your bubbly, wonderful personality. I could just see how that would work really, really well and give you an incredible experience on many levels. How did that influence where you are now? What can you say about that?
Well, I went on the cruise ships when I was 23. I had been living in Toronto for a few years, and I was looking for a way to kind of get out and shake my life up a little bit. And I knew that the ultimate goal was New York, but of course there's immigration issues. You need to have lots of money to do it. And so I had heard of doing this sing-along piano bar gig on the cruise ship. And so somehow I managed to finagle myself on there. I think I was the youngest person they ever hired.
Right. How did you get on? How did you get the gig? Do you remember?
It was a case of fake it till you make it, I think. I somehow talked my way into that, and they gave me a chance, and I just rose to the occasion. I was learning dozens and dozens of songs a week. I mean, I knew every jazz standard out there, but not people aren't generally requesting those in a piano bar. And so every night, you know, six nights a week for, I think the total number, I was 19 months that I spent out there, you know, six nights a week, 4 or 5 hours a night, I was in front of audiences, playing music, learning how to relate to people, getting confident, being in my voice, being at the piano. It really was an experience that has had a lifetime impact on me. And before I went out there, I really was very much a jazz person. I did not come to jazz through pop. To be able to have the influence of playing beautiful, amazing songs by great songwriters, being inside the lyrics, being able to be playing the piano that many hours was an experience that I went out there. It was almost 20 years ago. I think it was like 19 years ago with my last contract. But it has been the gift that has kept on giving, because I think the way that I interact with audiences, I think the fact that I sing and play piano at the same time in a solo context is still relatively rare. I think there aren't a lot of jazz musicians who do that. I think it's all really come out of that experience. So it was one that was very pivotal for me.
Oh, wow. I could just imagine, and talk about having a relationship with the piano on a cruise ship.
When the passengers went off the ship, I would sneak off and practice Bill Evans transcriptions and play Bach preludes and fugues. And besides the 4 or 5 hours that I was playing in front of people, I was playing another, you know, 4 or 5 hours after that. So it was really all I lived and breathed for many, many years.
Oh, that's really, really beautiful. And I mean, you knowing and coming to know so many different songs and being so flexible like that, I'm sure there were requests and all types of things as you went. And even people who'd be singing along with you, I'll bet you'd get groups that would start doing that, right?
Oh, I would have 100 people like with drinks over their heads, like, you know, I mean, the whole wazoo. It was really something else. So it really did teach me how it is very important to be able to engage an audience and to be entertaining. And I know with sometimes in jazz we think that it's about the art, or you don't necessarily consider the audience in the same way. I mean, you think of Miles Davis would deliberately put his back to the audience. You know, that there was sort of an anti-audience point of view. And I think that part of what I care about very much is making sure that I'm connecting to the audience and that I'm playing something that is meaningful to me that can then therefore touch them. That's always my objective.
You say that you grew up listening to your dad's 45s. Do you still have any of those? Do you still have
They're
the
all
box?
All in his basement in the cedar chest.
Oh my gosh, Brenda.
They're still there, yes. We do listen to a lot of music as a family, and it's something that is important to all of us. So one of the things that being a parent has taught me is that I can't do everything, so I have to choose very carefully what I do. And so I've really started to prioritize my time in different ways and make space. So this year I actually am calling myself on a teaching mini sabbatical. So I cut my teaching studio by 2/3 this year so that I would have time to do this project. And I'm also getting ready in a few months. I'm recording a trio album. And I actually on Saturday I'm leaving to go to the Banff Center for Fine Arts in the Rocky Mountains, where I'm doing a 2-week composer's residency.
Oh, goodness. So, you're going to be out almost our way in the Rockies.
Yes, very, very close. So I'm going to be at Banff, and I'm writing a song cycle about motherhood, actually.
Hey, I want to play some music. I chose the letters on the page from Right About Now. And what I just wanted to know is if you could just give a real quick background on maybe what that song means to you or something about it.
So I have a very close friend who was struggling with mental illness. This is it's kind of a heavy song. Mm-hmm. And this was a way for me to express the experience of watching her fall into this place. Mm-hmm. And so that's what the letters on the pages is watching somebody who is struggling and is trying to find their way out of a very difficult situation.
It creates a real honest portrait.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's hear it. The letters on the page. It's Brenda Earl Stokes from her album prior to her new one, Right About Now. And we're going to hear that song right now. Here we go.
She can run to, nowhere she can hide. The voice is coming with
I really want to move into a little bit of this new album here. I know we spoke a little bit about it, talking about it was done in no edits, no overdubs. There's all this beautiful, magical quality to having recorded it in your hometown. And your recording engineer, Adam Miner, is a high school buddy. That just really adds to the beauty of it. In this album, you're exploring space, textures, moods, and improvisation. Why are those elements important to you? And are they more important to you now than they've been before?
I think I'm in a place in my musical life where I've done so many different things. In addition to the cruise ship work we talked about before, I've also worked with a lot of music theater singers, and I've played a lot of music theater music with Broadway-type people. I've played a lot of classical music. I've played a lot of jazz in different contexts. And so I feel like I have a lot of textures, sounds that are available to me. And so part of what I wanted to do on this record was really to go to a lot of different places to really stretch to see what I could do. And also in improvisation, some of it I improvise vocally. So there's like some sort of more traditional scat solos. I'm improvising using lyrics in some parts. I'm improvising using the piano. There's an interface between the piano and the voice. So it's sort of like finding two things and trying to figure out how many different ways you can work with those two items. And so it's been an exploration of what can I do on the piano, what can I do vocally, and how do those two things interact?
You know, it really reflects not only in the titles of the songs that you chose to put on this album, but like you say, the real variety and variety of technique, as well as where your voice goes and then how it moves. And it's very, very emotive and reflective. And yet it also, it goes into its doubts and it comes back out again. I had a really hard time choosing which song I wanted to have listeners hear off this album. And what I want to do, and I don't always do this, but I'm on the fence about either The Consequences of Falling or How Long Has That Evening Train Been Gone? And I'm going to let you decide what you think listeners should hear off this album.
Why not Consequences of Falling?
It's a great video, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Yes.
That was the record. That's the video of the actual recording session.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so we need to pause and let listeners know that if they want to see this in action, which is really, really cool. I'm so glad you had a camera rolling when you did the sessions, because that just makes it more multidimensional and accessible. Where can they go, Brenda, to see your videos? Is it at your website itself?
Yeah, they can go to www.brendaearle.com, and that's Earl is spelled E-A-R. And the videos are there, and more videos will be up very soon.
Oh, good, good. What do you have to say about The Consequences of Falling?
Well, this is a song that was recorded originally by Katie Lang. It was the songwriting team wrote it for her. And there's a live album that she did. She recorded in New York City, and I love the song so much. And there's so much that's so evocative about the lyrics and the chords and the harmony and all of that. And so I sat down trying to fiddle with it a little bit to see what I could do. And I think I came up with something that is representative of the original, but that is pretty different.
Well, let's hear it, okay? It's a great album, Brenda. Congratulations on it. We're going to play The Consequences of Falling. It's on Brenda Earl Stokes' new CD that's out, Solo Sessions Volume 1. Let's hear this song.
Are you breathing what I'm breathing? Are your wishes the same as mine? Are you needing what I'm needing? I'm waiting for a sign. My hands tremble, my heart aches. I can't read your mind. One step towards you, two steps back. It feels like I'm crawling. Feels like I'm crawling. If I'm alone in this, I don't think I can face the consequences of falling.
How are you feeling about this album now that it's out?
I'm
there?
Feeling great. I've never done anything like this before. This is, as you said, my very first solo recording. And this, when I did the album release recently, it was the first time I'd ever done a proper solo concert in New York City. Not only
Yay.
Was I did I perform it solo and sing it solo, but I also have done all of the publicity and radio distribution solo. So I've been doing all of this work myself.
Wow.
I decided not to hire anybody. So through all of it, I just kept saying to myself, you know, this is something that you're going to just throw out into the world and see what happens. And I've been so fortunate that the response has been, you know, really fantastic. And I've gotten some really excellent reviews, and I've gotten a lot of interest from people where I didn't realize there was going to be that much interest for this little record that I did.
You know what? That's the best thing that could ever happen. And a great note to end on. I would wish you a whole lot of luck. You have a lot of things on your plate, but you also have some very exciting and inspirational projects coming up.
Thank you so much. It's really been a pleasure to be talking to you today.
Yeah, same here, Brenda. You have a great rest of the day and the evening.
Yeah, you too. Thank you.
Sure thing. And that ends our spot for tonight.